self-regard.
Get rather silly, but one thing's for sure, Phil Mack will guide you through and try to leave you feeling giddy and try to leave you feeling happy.
Thematic.
Heard on Wednesdays from 12 to 4.
Thematic. Interview some classics and so much more. Thematic. Thematic.
Catch Thematic every Wednesday from 12 to 4 p.m.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and welcome to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw with you on this, the 19th of April, 2025. We are in the swing of the spring season, and next week is Earth Week. We've got Earth Day coming up on the 22nd of April. I know this because it's also my brother Philip's birthday, and I always connect those things together. He's a wonderful person, and Earth Day is a wonderful thing to celebrate. Speaking of, here at Henry Ford College, there's an organization called Sustainable HFC. This is an organization that works on opportunities and ways to bring sustainability to our campus community, our community at large, and frankly, to our students, so that when they leave campus, they are feeling a little bit better about some things that they can do to help make a difference in terms of sustainability, saving our planet, and all of those other important things that we focus on year-round, as well as especially during Earth Week. Well, there's an event coming up on Tuesday on Earth Day from noon to 3 o'clock right here in the John McDonald Student and Culinary Arts Center. It's Building M, and it's a do-it-yourself reusable bag creating event. Basically, what we're doing is we're taking old t-shirts and turning them into reusable bags, like tote bags. These bags will be created and then donated to the Hawk's Nest, which is Henry Ford College's student food pantry. So we're asking people to donate their t-shirts, if you would like, between now and Tuesday. Donate those at the Health Sciences Education Center. That's Building G on the main campus. Or you can bring them to the event itself and maybe even make a bag or two. There will be supplies and materials provided for those that aren't able to bring a t-shirt. But Sustainable HFC members will guide you through this very fun activity. No special skills needed. Again, it is super cool. It's a free activity. So we're looking for you to participate so we can help make a difference and also help support students that need to acquire groceries, toiletries, and other things from our food pantry, which is the Hawk's Nest right here on campus. In the second portion of today's program, we're going to jump over to an organization called Generation Justice, and they are through Public Radio Exchange. This is a program from Earth Day 2 years ago, and they will be talking with Arturo Sandoval in honor of Earth Day, and Arturo spoke about the day itself and his work. He is one of the founding members of the Earth Day celebration, and I think you'll find his story fascinating. So stay tuned. That will be forthcoming right here on the WHFR Journal in about 45 minutes. But first, we are truly excited to bring to you the recent, as of actually this past Tuesday, State of the City Address with Dearborn Mayor Abdullah Hammoud. It was a resounding event and one that we want to make sure that everybody gets to hear in our community. So thanks to Hassan Abbas from the City of Dearborn for making this audio available to us. But we will bring you in its entirety the State of the City Address with Mayor Abdullah Hammoud. So we're going to let Craig Schuler jump in and give you the introductions, and we hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the 2025 Dearborn State of the City Address with Mayor Abdullah H. Hammoud. Please take your seats. Before we begin tonight's address, please join us in remembering Mayor John B. O'Reilly, Jr. On behalf of the City of Dearborn, we express our sincerest gratitude to former Mayor Jack O'Reilly and the entire O'Reilly family for their dedicated service to Dearborn. His legacy will have a lasting impact. Thank you. And now, please stand for the national anthem performed by Dearborn resident Maria Saad.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the
Please welcome the 34th Dearborn City Council President, Michael T. Serini.
Good evening, everyone. It's an honor to be here representing the 34th Dearborn City Council and to take a moment to reflect on how far we've come and what it took to get here. The council work isn't always glamorous. We have hours of reading, debating, reviewing. We deal with the budgets, ordinances, bids, contracts. These are all the nuts and bolts of good governance. But behind every decision, we're thinking about you, our residents, our neighbors, and our businesses. It's the people who help us stay focused and keep our priorities clear. Some of our best moments aren't in the paperwork. They're in the conversations. Like when a student comes to our council meeting, speaks up about traffic safety, that sparks real dialogue, and that conversation turns into action. I'm grateful to serve alongside my colleagues who keep our residents at the heart of every decision. Our work doesn't stop after the council meetings. Through our newsletters, our council and the community segments, we're showing up, we're listening, and we're responding. And each week, I see a city that's engaged, healthy and vibrant. Since last year, we put words into action. Our Clean Streets initiatives added two new sweepers. We increased trash pickups in our park. And in our downtowns, we added dedicated teams to keep our city clean. We created the first council small business grants, where 20 local businesses received $5,000 each to update and improve their storefronts. Our Council Connection newsletter is reaching every household twice a year to keep our residents informed. A huge thanks to our council staff for making this happen. We also pass ordinances to modernize our city, with 80% of our housing stock built before 1970. Our residential lot coverage ordinance was amended to allow for today's trends and to help our homeowners updating aging properties. On the commercial side, we implemented stronger rules on bulk storage and industrial waste to keep our residents safer. And as we await our storm sewer study, we passed and funded several preventative measures to keep water out of your basements. Public safety measures and traffic improvements have been expanded. Lighted stop and radar signs are just a few measures we are taking in our traffic calming initiatives. Two new parks have been completed, and a third on the way. All this was done while passing balanced budgets with no tax increases. It's a good thing. I'm proud of the progress that we have that we've made, and I'm more excited about what's ahead for us. I want to thank you for your trust and engagement. And together, we're building a stronger, smarter, and more connected Dearborn. And now, please enjoy our feature presentation, Destination Dearborn.
Today's video magazine is a special featuring one of America's most often visited cities, Dearborn. This historic community, located in southeastern Michigan, is rooted in history with an aggressive eye toward the future.
Always on the cutting edge of technology, Dearborn continues to plan for its future growth and expansion.
Dedicated to the demands of this fast emerging business explosion, Dearborn is a desirable choice for corporations that want the best.
Dearborn enjoys an international reputation as the world headquarters of major companies and organizations, and as the home of Greenfield Village. This diverse and historic city eagerly welcomes new business opportunities and tourism.
Recently, we took an aerial and ground tour of this distinguished city to show you why Dearborn is not to be missed as your next destination.
When people say all roads lead to Dearborn, they are, in fact, quite accurate. Located in this prime area of southeastern Michigan, Dearborn is easily accessible by major freeway systems, a mere 20 minutes from Metropolitan Airport, and centrally located near other major cities.
Dearborn is a community of nearly 100,000 residents from a wide variety of ethnic and cultural backgrounds, all living together, carving out a quality of life for their families. Dearborn maintains an outstanding reputation as a leader in education.
Few people realize that Dearborn is also a college town. Both the University of Michigan Dearborn campus and the Henry Ford Community College are situated on shared grounds.
Through diverse shopping areas, Dearborn's retail merchants are vital contributors to the city. Dearborn's restaurants feature a wide range of cultural foods and delicacies for an Epicurean's delight. Dearborn is also safe and well-maintained neighborhoods. Shady, tree-lined streets dotted with recreational facilities and lush parks. Homeowners are proud of their neighborhoods. Clean streets and community pride helps to keep property value up as Dearborn continues to grow.
Dearborn is a city that blends the best examples of communities from across America. Dearborn welcomes the challenge of change.
Dearborn, Dearborn, destination Dearborn, Dearborn, Dearborn.
Please welcome Dearborn Mayor Abdullah H. Hamoud.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you all for joining this year's State of the City Address. I want to begin by expressing my sincere thanks to our City Council, City Clerk, our dedicated judges, and all the elected officials from Wayne County to Lansing to Washington, D.C., who represent Dearborn. Please stand and be recognized. I also want to take a moment to recognize the directors of all our departments across our city and the 1,400 staff who work tirelessly to make the city work for our residents. Would all City of Dearborn staff please stand and be recognized? Most importantly, I want to thank the residents of Dearborn. Your voices, your passion, and your dedication to our city are what make our community strong. And of course, I wouldn't be here without my family. My wife, my inspiration, Dr. Fatima Beydoun, thank you for your support, your patience, and partnership throughout this time in office. I am so grateful for our daughters, the future of our great city. As much as Dearborn has changed throughout the decades, so much of what makes it special has remained. You heard phrases in that video that still ring true today. Dearborn is a community of over 100,000 people from a wide variety of cultural and ethnic backgrounds, all living together, all carving out a quality of life for their families. Homeowners are proud of their neighborhoods. Dearborn is a desirable choice for businesses that want the best. Dearborn restaurants feature a wide range of cultural foods and delicacies. And above all, Dearborn welcomes the challenge of change. For generations, thousands of families like my own picked up a map, set their pens down on Dearborn, and marked it as the destination, the place to be. The Dearborn shown in that video is just about a decade before I was born. It's the Dearborn that welcomed my father from the south of Lebanon in the 1980s and the version of the city that my mother knew in her childhood here in the South End. It was a city that made a promise that if you come here, plant roots, work hard, and give back to your community, that you too can achieve the American dream. Now, Dearborn has transformed over the years, but that promise has carried through generations, and it is incumbent upon us to decide what Dearborn will promise tomorrow and every day after. In my first State of the City address, I stood before you and outlined a vision for our city. We laid out priorities that were clear and urgent, with the goal that every resident, whether here for generations or just arriving, feels at home in Dearborn. And that's exactly what we're doing. Since assuming office, we have championed innovation and modernization of city services. We've prioritized public safety and justice for all by lowering our crime rates. We've made major investments in Dearborn families and small businesses to provide economic opportunity and mobility for everyone. We've implemented a health and all policies approach to make Dearborn greener and healthier. And we've strengthened civic engagement and democracy in our community by investing in our public institutions. As responsible stewards of your tax dollars, we've done all this work and more with a balanced budget since coming into office. And we're on course to pass another balanced budget again this May. That's three structurally balanced budgets proposed and passed for the first time in two decades. And to achieve this, we've also kept taxes steady. We now have the lowest tax rate in the city of Dearborn since 2010. What's more is if we stay on this path, it's expected that by 2035, we'll also be able to offer Dearborn families an additional 10% millage rate reduction that has not been seen since 2009. We've also been creative in how we bring money into our city, and we spend it wisely. Since launching the Department of Philanthropy and Grants in 2022, we have brought in over $120 million in grants to put towards dozens of city projects. We're providing world-class services, programs, and events with fewer resources, tighter timelines, and more state and federal restrictions than the last three mayoral administrations. That is real government efficiency. So tonight, my administration and I are excited to chart our ongoing vision for our hometown. We are here to reflect on the progress that we've made, to hold ourselves accountable to the promises that we set, and to chart the path forward together. When we first took office, we envisioned our parks as a focal destination, a communal place where families can gather, children of all abilities can play, and neighbors can connect. At our last State of the City address, we presented you with the idea and renderings for three new state-of-the-art parks located across our city. We put together an over $30 million investment in our parks and green spaces at no additional cost to our residents. Since then, in partnership with Wayne County leadership and our County Commissioner Sam Baydoun, we have celebrated, absolutely, thank you, Sam. We have celebrated the openings of Peace Parks West and East in each of our downtown districts, and we are excited to cut the ribbon on Peace Park South this summer. Not long after we got to work on the Peace Project, I had the opportunity to also connect with Dearborn Advocate for Families in the Disability Community. Muna Adewiye has dedicated her life to fighting for access, equity, and inclusion for children with disabilities and their families to ensure that everyone receives a fair shot at life. She also connected us with families like the Burns and the Sods, who have raised their families here in Dearborn. The Burns shared stories on how they traveled to other cities just to find adaptive equipment for their son Andrew. The Saad family shared the difficulty of watching their daughter Fatima sit on the sideline because playgrounds were not built with her in mind. Inspired by their stories, we connected with commissioners on our Dearborn Disability Concerns Commission to dream up of three parks that would provide equal opportunity for play for all Dearborn residents. Today, we are proud to announce that by the summer of this year, every single family living in the city of Dearborn will be just 10 minutes away from an accessible playscape. Those parks will be at Crowley, Lapeer, and Ford Woods. Because here in Dearborn, we believe that families like the Burns and Saads should never have to sacrifice play or precious childhood memories simply because their child moves, plays, or experiences the world differently. Please join me in thanking Muna, the Burns family, and the Saad family, and all Dearborn families involved in this project for their work and advocacy. Thank you. It is because of passionate residents like them that our city can become a more welcoming, accessible, and family-friendly place. Now, enhancing and expanding our public spaces continues to be a top priority of this administration. Libraries have always been gateways of knowledge. And in today's world, knowledge isn't always learned by the book. It's built with hands-on learning through technology, with experiences that spark imagination and creativity. Several years ago, when there were rumblings about closing yet another library in our community, my wife and I had just welcomed our daughter into this world. And like so many parents, we wanted to give her every opportunity to learn, explore, and grow. My wife took us across Southeast Michigan to visit the premier children's interactive learning spaces, museums, STEM centers, and educational hubs. We walked through these spaces, such as the Michigan Science Center, the renovated library in Redford Township, and the STEM Center in Northville. We watched children build, create, and engage with the world of science, technology, and art. And at one point, my wife turned to me and asked, "Why can't Dearborn have something like this?" That question stuck with me, because like most things, she was right. Now, if you know anything about me by now, I love the opportunity to start a competition whenever and wherever possible. So, we set out to develop a children's center that would rival all the rest. With the thought of our children in mind, and selfishly because I shouldn't have to drive 25 minutes to Northville every weekend for a family outing, we got to work on reimagining what our public library could be. I began calling directors of the centers we visited, asking about their programming, attendance numbers, and what it took to bring their visions to life. I toured the facilities again, this time with architects, educators, and community leaders, taking notes, asking questions, and learning everything one could about what makes these spaces thrive. We wanted to create a community space where students can experiment with robotics, music, arts, and engineering. A place where young minds can tinker with circuits, explore 3D printing, and engage in hands-on science projects. So, I'm thrilled to present to you the future of Esper Library, the premier children's exploration center of Southeast Michigan. The best part, all Dearborn families can visit and enjoy the center free of charge, because cost and distance should never be limiting factors for our children's imagination. Take that, Northville. And after we finish ESPER, our sights are already set on transforming Bryant Library as well. Now, public safety remains among our highest priorities, and we have taken bold steps to combat speeding, reckless driving, and other immediate public health threats. Thanks to our dedicated police officers and police leadership, crime rates have dropped significantly. In fact, several major crime categories have declined by double digits since 2023. For the first time in two decades, our police department is fully funded and fully staffed. That means more officers on patrol, faster response times, and an even stronger commitment to proactive, community-driven policing. Our approach is working, making Dearborn the second safest big city in Michigan. And you can bet that we're vying for that number one spot. So somebody tell Mike Taylor in Sterling Heights that we're coming for him. We know that statistics alone do not ease fears. While crime has gone down, reckless driving and speeding still remain real threats to our families along our roads and next to our walkways. That's why we've taken a three-pronged approach to make our streets safer using the guiding principles of enforcement, education, and engineering. When it comes to enforcement, our officers are cracking down harder than ever on reckless driving, issuing citations and getting dangerous drivers off our roads. By focusing on the enforcement of dangerous driving, our department issued nearly 25,000 citations in 2024, a 5% increase from the year prior. We're not only going after drivers, our enforcement strategy is also targeting driving schools. In March, we began issuing warnings to driving schools to crack down on passing unqualified and potentially dangerous drivers. Within 2 weeks of that action, the Secretary of State shut down two of the driving schools that reported to be certifying unqualified drivers. When it comes to education, we've worked with the 19th District Court to bring back the traffic school after a six-year hiatus. Drivers who receive traffic infractions for failing to follow the rules of the road are now required to go back to school to relearn the basics. We've also launched a public education initiative using our social media series, Traffic Tuesdays, to keep the community engaged and informed. And in addition to all of this, our police department is hosting teen driver education sessions this summer to help young drivers sharpen their skills. When it comes to engineering, we've been hard at work on a data-driven approach, utilizing citation and accident data. We pursued an evidence-based pilot for speed humps, installing three sets near Hemlock, Lapeer, and Levegood Parks. We installed speed monitors to track their impact and found that speeding was reduced by over 20% in those areas. And since then, we have seen 98% speed compliance by drivers in these zones. Given the success of this pilot, we secured a $1.5 million grant to address the public health issue of traffic safety. With these dollars, this summer, we're doubling down on roadway safety, with plans to install 300 speed humps, 100 illuminated stop signs, 60 speed radar display signs, 40 illuminated intersection signs, 20 raised pedestrian crosswalks, 12 school zone crossings, and 5 flashing beacons, and a partridge in a pear tree. We're even re-engineering several roads to better protect our residents. These include pursuing Dearborn's first ever roundabout at Chase and Ruby, because we know roundabouts reduce serious crashes by forcing drivers to slow down. We will also be pursuing a full redesign of Schaefer and Prospect, one of the most dangerous left turns in our city. These three steps enforcement, education, and engineering send a clear message that if you drive in Dearborn, you drive safely. No excuses, no exceptions. A few weeks ago, Southeast Michigan got nearly 3 inches of rain. You may have noticed that while neighboring cities battled flash floods on their roads and in their basements, Dearborn was not underwater. Let's talk about how we made that happen. While working on a multi-year study of our storm and sewer system, we weren't just waiting for the results. We got to work immediately, removing over 50 log jams across the Rouge River. This actually lowered the water levels along the river by over 1 foot, increasing the river's capacity and allowing water to travel through Dearborn section of the Rouge at a quicker rate, reducing the opportunity for flooding. We're also building out a green infrastructure plan, from neighborhood bioswales to integrated water retention systems and parks and green spaces. Along Morro Circle, we converted 24 residential easements into environmentally friendly bioswales that absorb up to 40,000 gallons of water per storm. That's 40,000 fewer gallons of water on our streets and in our yards. Our hope is to scale this initiative to at least 1,000 easements, or 3% of residential homes in Dearborn, which would absorb at least 1 million gallons of additional rainwater per storm. To date, we've already programmed over $25 million to reduce the likelihood of flooding in our city, knowing that more needs to be done. Programming includes clearing out the Colson-Palmer line, a 12-foot diameter pipe that is filled with debris and water, which has reduced its effectiveness. 40% of its current capacity is actually out of service. And what we're working to resolve this issue is estimated that upon completion, we will be adding an additional 2.5 million gallons of storage to our capacity per rain event. And lastly, thanks to a federal grant, we're also in the process of designing grade protection stations and flap grate structures to protect nearly 3,300 homes in East Dearborn. In essence, we're adding a giant backflow preventer to the main storm water line underground, rather than individual homes, preventing backflow into people's basements in an entire neighborhood. In the coming months, you can expect to see our detailed plan outlining how we will address flooding and reduce the likelihood of basement backups across our city for years to come. We also know that deindustrialization will help reduce the risk of flooding long term, which is why we've acquired properties across our city to turn them from asphalt into green spaces. Replacing pavement with green area allows water to be absorbed naturally, easing pressure on our stormwater system and lowering the risk of future flooding. And now, we're taking it a step further. With support of our Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and state dollars we've already brought in, resources and aligned departments to build on this foundation, we're reimagining one of the most heavily impacted corridors in our city, Dearborn South End, through a bold and long-term project we call the Dearborn Industrial Greenbelt. This initiative has been years in the making. You don't cut a ribbon once and call it done. It's the kind of work that builds year after year, piece by piece, department by department. The goal? To create a living green buffer along Industrial Street that slows down traffic, reduces air pollution, and absorbs floodwaters while making space for nature in one of the city's most industrialized areas. We've already acquired key properties and over 200,000 square feet of land to begin building out this vision. And we've worked with some of the nation's top thinkers, architects, and urban planners at the University of Michigan to make it happen. Because in Dearborn, environmental justice isn't just a slogan. It's something we have to design for, zone for, and push for. The way we see it, everything in Dearborn has a tie back to public health. And nowhere is that felt more strongly than in the south end of our community. You've heard me talk about it before. Dearborn is the epicenter of childhood asthma. To improve air quality in the South End, we've raised the standard for good corporate citizenship in the city of Dearborn. To date, we've secured up to $4 million in legal settlements, requiring corporations to mitigate air pollution from their operations by June 30th of this year. This includes the planting of new trees, paving off hazardous waste areas, and replacing sections of the stormwater management system. And as a result, we've seen a domino effect. Other businesses are following suit to avoid the legal process. But that still isn't enough. Despite the progress we've seen, we knew it was beyond time for Dearborn to crack down on industrial storage. Storing hazardous materials, especially in industrial sites, releases harmful air particles known as fugitive dust. Simply put, these stored materials don't just sit. They become part of the air that we breathe. And the more they're moved and the taller the piles, the worse the problem gets. Last summer, we worked with members of our council to propose the strictest bulk storage requirement in the state of Michigan. And with the support from residents, neighborhood associations, community partners, and public health advocates who have fought for better health standards for decades, the ordinance will now require companies to maintain piles under 25 feet as supported by the science to drastically reduce the risk of fugitive dust. And I'm happy to share that as of today, many companies are already complying and submitting their plans to come into compliance of this new ordinance. And other cities are reaching out, asking us for our playbook. Becoming a destination city isn't just about new buildings or business growth. It's about creating real opportunities for everyone to lead healthy, dignified lives. It means looking out for our families when others won't. It means filling the gaps and stepping up where it matters most. That's what we do every day, scanning the globe for bold, evidence-based programs we could bring home to Dearborn. And we're doing that again. When most people think of Dearborn, they think of the Rouge Factory and auto production. But do you know what else Dearborn is really good at producing? Babies. That's right. Dearborn produces over 1,700 babies a year. Our birth rate is consistently 60% higher than the state average. Dearborn has more babies per capita than all of Michigan as a whole. That's a fact. A striking trend with real implications for schools, services, and public health. Now, the first year of life is most crucial for a child's development and long-term health. Research has shown that the arrival of a newborn often triggers a sudden financial strain for families, regardless of their income level. With all these factors considered, my administration is proud to announce that RX Kids is coming to Dearborn. RX Kids is a life-changing program that provides direct financial support to new and expecting mothers. Through the program, every single Dearborn mother welcoming a baby will receive $4,500 over 6 months. This program would not have been possible without Dr. Mona Hanna, whose visionary leadership and unwavering commitment to child health made RX Kids a reality. Her groundbreaking idea to provide direct financial support to every newborn and their family began in Flint and is now going to transform lives right here in Dearborn. We are also grateful for the partnership of Wayne County Executive Warren Evans and Deputy County Executive Asad Turfi, who recognize the transformative potential of RX Kids. And they've stepped up with critical funding to bring this program to cities across Southeast Michigan. And a special thank you to our public health department who worked tirelessly to bring RX Kids homes, and to our State Senator Sylvia Santana and State Representative Al-Abbas Farhat, who worked to secure state funding to make this a reality. Your collective leadership is saving lives. This is exactly the kind of upstream, transformative public health solution that defines the future that we're building here. And we're actually $1 million away from securing this program for at least 2 years in Dearborn. And so if anyone in this audience today or watching at home knows someone willing to help us bridge this gap, lock the doors. We're ready to partner with you. I almost brought you back to Ramadan. We also recognize that if we want Dearborn to be the ideal destination for visitors and residents alike, we must ensure that we deliver modern services to give our residents a leg up. Since coming into office, we've launched a brand new website, dearborn.gov, a modern user experience-based multilingual website intuitively designed to make it easier for you to quickly get to the services and information that you need. Later this year, we'll be rolling out our online permitting system that will ensure that our permit desk never closes. We're also improving how residents can reach the city when they need us. Now, in non-emergency situations, you can call 311 and be connected with an agent to answer your question or be routed to the appropriate city staff for quicker one-on-one service. 311 is live right now. Since the introduction of 311, about one of every three calls we receive are actually handled by a virtual agent powered by AI, which in turn has given our city staff greater capacity to address more complex issues one-on-one with residents. We've worked to eliminate language barriers by also offering translation services for the first time in Arabic, Spanish, and English, online and in person. Now, Dearborn has been the premier destination for economic opportunity for as long as Ford engines have been running. We've been a beacon for economic mobility for families, a steady ground to open and operate a small business, and the beating heart of Michigan's entrepreneurial industry. For as long as I can remember, Warren Avenue has been the lifeblood and beating heart of our city. It is wholly unique to Dearborn, a corridor where signs greet you in English and Arabic, where dreams of owning a business come to life, and where families create lifelong traditions. From my favorite shawarma spot at Tahama's, to the one-stop shop, Nice Price, to the home of the nation's best honey at Asalbi.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning, sir. Look like Tahama.
I love you, Abdullah. He's the best guy. I love
you. He wants to give you honey to make you have four babies at once.
That might explain Dearborn's high fertility rate. Thank you, Othman. He didn't know he was in that cameo. But for too long, Warren Avenue business owners have watched the city pass by their district, despite its rich culture and strong community. Since we came into office, we have sought to reinvest in Warren Avenue, just as these businesses have invested in us. This past winter, we launched the Warren Avenue Facade Improvement Program to help businesses upgrade their exteriors along Warren Avenue. Shops along the corridor from Greenfield to Lanyo are now eligible to apply for up to $200,000 in support from the city to redesign their building facades, making the area a brighter, more modern representation of this historic business destination. Small businesses that have served as pillars of our community for years, like Nadia's Bakery, Cedarland Bakery, and Alamir, are some of the businesses to directly benefit from this program. And these are the real renderings of the construction to come. Our efforts are inspiring local corporations to make similar investments. We're especially proud to work with Hollingsworth, a global supply chain and logistics corporation headquartered on Warren Avenue, who have committed to injecting $30 million into their historic offices located along the corridor. Furthermore, again with the aid of our Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Dearborn was selected as a grant award winner under the U.S. Department of Transportation's Safe Streets for All grant program. The city secured nearly $25 million to redesign and rebuild Warren Avenue to make the area safer and easier for customers and pedestrians to get to. We are so excited and thrilled for what the future holds for Warren Avenue. Lastly, we cannot leave without talking about blight. For too long, abandoned and deteriorating properties have held some neighborhoods back. But we are making real progress. On Oakman Boulevard, we delivered on our promise. The long vacant apartments have now been demolished, clearing the way for new opportunities. This is along our downtown East Michigan Avenue corridor. At Village Plaza, we took the necessary legal steps to ensure good stewardship, and now property owners are abating the asbestos to provide for a safe demolition scheduled this summer. This eyesore will soon be a thing of the past, making way for new possibilities. And as for the Hyatt, we finally have a strong partner at the table. Talks are underway to transform this once neglected space into a vibrant, mixed-use residential development, bringing life back to a key part of our city. This is what progress looks like. We are tearing down what is broken, we are laying the foundation for growth, and we're ensuring that our city moves forward, stronger, cleaner, and full of promise. Dearborn has been the destination for generations because we have something others don't, a community that lifts each other up, where neighbors look out for one another, where families grow together, and where a deep sense of belonging connects us all. While cities across Michigan have seen their populations plummet, Dearborn remains the fastest growing city in Michigan, and that is by no accident. Growth is not just happening, we are making it happen. New generations are choosing Dearborn as their destination because of the investments we've made to create safe neighborhoods, vibrant downtowns, and family-friendly programming. And we must continue to build on this momentum to ensure that it is sustainable for long-lasting, sustainable and long-lasting for generations to come. Dearborn is not just keeping the pace, we are setting it. We are ready for the challenge of change. We are the example for what a thriving, welcoming, and forward-thinking city looks like. The state of our city is strong. Whether you're a growing family, looking to plant roots in a community, or a business hoping to thrive, Dearborn is and always will be the destination. Thank you.
You are listening to the WHFR Journal, and again, many thanks to Hassan Abbas and the City of Dearborn for providing that audio for us to play of the state of the city with Mayor Abdallah Hammoud. Next, we jump into Generation Justice, and we're going to talk Earth Day.
Why is Earth Day important to you?
We hear from Arturo Sandoval, who's the founding director of the Center of Southwest Culture and was part of the national organizing team for the first Earth Day in 1970.
Arturo has worked in civil rights, economic justice, human rights, educational disparity and equity, as well as conservation efforts.
And is a trailblazer in advocacy for economic, cultural, environmental, educational, and civil rights and development.
This evergreen segment about Earth Day was conducted by GJ's very own Victor Torres.
Hello, my name is Victor Torres with Generation Justice. I'm here today with Arturo Sandoval, a native New Mexican and founder and president of the Center of Southwest Culture. He was also the Western Regional Coordinator of the very first Earth Day. Arturo, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, I'm a native of New Mexico, as you mentioned earlier, born and raised in northern New Mexico to a very large family. But at a very early age, I became very concerned about a lot of critical issues facing our country. And I think that was a process of being in college, coming of age at the age of 18, 19. The fact that I actually came to university during a period of great upheaval and excitement in the country. There was the anti-war Vietnam movement. There was the Black Civil Rights Movement. There was the Chicano movement, starting the Chicano Civil Rights Movement. There was the Women's Rights Movement starting. So as a young man, it was incredible to be able to see all these different movements happening. And I got really engaged in all of those issues at a very young age. So that's how I came to Earth Day. I saw that there was really a holistic approach to all of the issues we were facing, that I believe that a lot of the same people that caused bad housing or that were polluting rivers and companies like that were basically the same people that were discriminating against people because of the color of their skin or exploiting people for personal profit. So to me, I didn't see a difference between the women's rights movement, the Chicano civil rights movement, the Black civil rights movement, or in this case, what emerged as the environmental movement.
And you also founded the Center of Southwest Culture. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, I founded the Center of Southwest Culture about 21 years ago. And the reason I founded the center was I wanted to have a formal institutional setting, a way for me to be able to impact communities, to build healthy communities, especially in underserved communities, especially Latino and Native American communities. So the center works to create healthy people and healthy communities, mostly in what we call the Greater Southwest. So that means northern Mexico and the greater U.S. Southwest. And we do it through economic development. We do it through cultural and educational programs. So I've been at that formally for 21 years, but I've actually been engaged in building community for about 46 years since I was a young man of about 18.
Well, that's amazing that you have been at it that long. On the very first Earth Day, you were quoted as saying, "We are going to make people understand that the kind of things that cause air pollution and water pollution are the same kinds of things that cause poverty, that cause hunger in this country." What did you mean by that? And is it still true today?
Yes. And I think what I meant by that was that the same kind of values that would make people think that it's all right to pollute the planet, that to use our very limited water resources with no interest or concern about the consequences of how they're destroying these very critical resources of land and air and water for the simple purpose of creating personal wealth, are the same core group of people, or the same people who share the value that think it's okay to exploit people. And if you think it's okay to exploit both the natural resources of the planet, I believe you're the same kind of person that thinks it's okay to exploit people because of the color of their skin, or because they have a disability, or because they're a woman. So I believe that then, and I think, and that's why I got so deeply engaged in Earth Day and organizing the first Earth Day, but it's why I continue to do the work, because I know that the problems we had 42 years ago in Earth Day are just as bad, if not worse. In some areas we've improved, and in other areas it's gotten worse.
I think that is still going on today, and I think we have made a lot of improvements. And there seemed to be a lot going on around the country. Can you tell me what else was going on and why people really wanted to make Earth Day and really wanted to bring environmental issues?
Well, it was a period of great activism, as I told you, with the Black Civil Rights Movement, the Chicano Civil Rights Movement, the Women's Movement. So people were already very active. And the idea of spending a day on behalf of the Earth, demonstrating on behalf of the Earth, really resonated at that point in America. So on Earth Day, there were more than 20 million people out doing peaceful, positive activities all over the country. More than 20 million Americans turned out, and it's still the single largest civil action in the history of the United States. So I'm very proud to have been a very small part of that. But what happened then, the reason that people responded is, for example, we were polluting all of our rivers. Our rivers are actually catching fire. I forget which river it was, that maybe it was in Pittsburgh or in Ohio, where there was a chemical company putting so many chemicals out there that one night there was a fire started on a little boat, and the whole river looked like the water was burning because it had so many chemicals. And I think that image went across the country, and it startled people into thinking, oh my God, I mean, is that the level we've gotten to? So as a result of Earth Day, a lot of major initiatives were enacted at the national level. So the Clean Air and Water Act was passed. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, was started. There was just a whole bunch of formal legislation that was passed unanimously by a bipartisan support in both houses of Congress and by then President Nixon, of all people. And we were able to clean up the rivers and make our air a lot safer. So in that way, we've gotten really good. The long-term deficit, the things we didn't realize was that that value, that negative, what I call a negative value, that people think they can enrich themselves personally at the expense of everyone else on the planet, continues to be a very dominant theme in most capitalist systems. So it's unfortunate that that's still there. Now we're facing global warming, and you know, the planet really is in peril. And it's, and you never want to just, you don't want to say, oh, we're, the planet's dying. But there's serious issues, and we really need to address them. And the first Earth Day has not, obviously not solved that problem. So it's important for all of us, especially youth, to really get involved at a local level in trying to figure out, how can I help just every day in some small way? What's one little thing I can do every day that makes the planet healthier?
Yeah, I think it's important to keep on, because we have to live on this planet, and it's our duty to take care of it and to make sure that we're doing all we can.
Absolutely. And I think we're all connected. And I've always thought, Victor, that I've always thought back to my great-grandfather, who was named Leonardo Sanchez. He was a land-grant member in the Tecolote land-grant in San Miguel County in northern New Mexico. And he was an activist in fighting against the encroachment, the fact that their common lands, their Mexicano lands, were being stolen by outside people who wanted to take their land for their own purposes. It's the same thing that's happening with when you pollute a river. You're taking something that does not belong to you for your own personal gain. And he was what they called the Goras Blancas. They were fighters against this encroachment. And my grandfather was one of those people. So that was more than 100 years ago, 120, 30 years ago. Yeah. But I see myself as part of a long connection of people in history. So my role is to do my part in my lifetime and to honor my grandfather by my work and to encourage my children. And now I have a beautiful new one-year-old grandson. Is I need to pass along the torch to him so that he understands that it's important that he work to save the planet and to work for peace and justice.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad there's people out there like you that are trying to pass on the torch for future generations.
Well, and I likewise think it's wonderful that there's people like you and Generation Justice that actually care enough at a young age to really want to make a difference. And not only do you want to, you actually are doing it at a much younger age than I was. So that's really fantastic. It makes me feel very proud to know that the younger generation does care and the younger generation is engaged. And I think you guys are a lot smarter than we are. I don't think we had Wheaties when I was a kid, and you guys do. So I can tell you guys are a lot sharper than we were back in the day.
Well, thank you for saying that. And so what can people still do to help and environmental issues?
Well, you know, it's such a huge problem that you think when you look at it, if you just started reading national media, you would think, well, there's nothing I can do. The problems are too big. But that's not true. There's something you can do every day here locally. If you're living in Albuquerque or in Santa Rosa or in Taos or in Española or in Las Cruces, there's something you can do as a human being. There's great energy that each human has. And we can expend that energy in a positive way locally, doing things locally. So there's a lot of things you can do. You can start by just changing your lifestyle a little bit to use less water every day. We live in a desert. That would be good. But there's a lot of things you can do. You can lobby your legislators. You can write letters to the editor when you see issues and you want them to do something about it. You can organize like Generation Justice does. You organize with other young people and you go meet with people that are in power. And you say, this has to change. And I think that does have impact. I know it does have impact because in my own life, I have seen people change behaviors just because they got organized and they stayed at it and they did the work. Each of us in our own village, our own town, our own city, each of us can change the world for the better.
Yes, I think that's important that the younger generation know what is going on and just so they can be able to change things and to help out in their communities. So I think that's important. And like you said, everybody can make a difference. So I think that's very profound. listeners that haven't really been involved enough, why would you encourage them?
I don't like to be an alarmist, but I do think the Earth is under enormous stress because of human actions, and I think those actions can be curtailed. We have the power as intelligent human beings to stop the kinds of activities we're doing now that are really putting a huge amount of stress on the system, on the planet's system. So as long as we have a choice and that it's still not too late, I think everybody has an opportunity to get involved in trying to convince those people in power that are creating these issues and these problems that they need to stop. And we can do it. And it doesn't require an armed struggle or an armed revolution. It requires people really committed to the issues and people willing to devote their life. Because I started Earth Day in 42 years. I helped start Earth Day 42 years ago. But the struggle goes on. I have to do something every day. And I do something every day. I try to commit myself every day to make the planet a better place.
Thank you, Arturo, for helping create this wonderful holiday and sharing about the importance of fighting against all oppression and bringing to light the intersectionality of Earth Day.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's tale of friendship, wounds, and healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn,